All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today is another Q&A episode where I will be answering your listener questions dealing with these beloved Atlanta Falcons.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, been covering the Falcons for many years at that website. Of course, I'm on Twitter at FalcFans, and I'm the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. I said beloved Falcons at the top of the show, but I probably should have used the term beleaguered Falcons. We have some listener questions dealing with the beleagueredness, the beleague, whatever that noun is for that word. With this Falcon team, we'll be answering those on today's episodes. As is usually the norm on the Q&A episode, people can send in their questions, their comments, their suggestions via email, Twitter, and Facebook. Today, I'm going to be answering some Twitter questions. If you have email, I know some of you guys sent in some email questions, but I will get to those tomorrow because we're not going to do a fan talk this week. I'll just sort of punt that till next week, and we'll continue to answer some questions on tomorrow's episode, some interesting thoughts and whatnot. But today we're just answering Twitter questions, so people sent those into FalcFans and Locked On Falcons. But if you guys want to send in more questions to potentially be answered tomorrow, then you can do so at those two Twitter addresses. Best to send it to Locked On Falcons. You can also do it on Facebook. Locked On Falcons is the Facebook page. And of course, the email address is lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And so those of you guys that sent in those email questions, I know there's a couple of you. I will definitely answer those on tomorrow's episode. So I apologize, but we got a great show ahead of us. Let's jump right into it. First question comes from Andy at Falcons. Andy Gallagher, former Fan Talk person. I hope I'm getting that right. He asked, if you were Thomas Dimitroff, what would you be willing to pay Vic Beasley, and what do you think a team would be willing to pay him on the open market? Well, since if I'm Thomas Dimitroff, I see Vic Beasley as a long-term Sam linebacker that can, you know, in nickel situations, put his hand in the dirt and rush the quarterback. So I think that's worth something. I wouldn't have a problem paying him a contract that's, you know, averages like $6 or $7 million a year. I might be willing to go up to $8 million a year, particularly if his pass rushing ability shows out a little bit more in the second half of the season, which is possible given I think there are some more favorable matchups in the second half of the season than or coming out of the bye week than there have been. Or no, let me rephrase that. From this point on, there are a couple more favorable matchups that maybe Vic Beasley could take advantage of and look a little bit better as a pass rusher, or look a little bit more consistent as a pass rusher in the back half of the season. But eight is probably my max that I'd be willing to pay for the type of player that I think Vic Beasley is. As for what he would get on the open market, I think that's pretty all over the place. The thing you got to keep in mind is that he does have another year on his contract. He is signed through the 2019 season because the Falcons did exercise that fifth year option this past spring in regards to Vic Beasley. So there is another year before he hits the open market. So that basically means he has 27 more games to show what he is before he hits the open market. And if he plays well in those 27 games, his market value would be much higher. If he doesn't, then it'll be lower than what I could guesstimate at this point in time. But I could see someone paying him, $10 million a year, something in the eight-figure range, even if he doesn't have market improvement over the next year and a half. I would say his floor is probably somewhere around $7 or $8 million per year. That $8 million is about what Andre Branch got from Miami to basically be a situational pass rusher for them. I would say right now, I think realistically, his ceiling is probably in that Nick Perry range, which was about $12 million a year that Green Bay just gave him, I think, this past offseason. I think you would have to see significant growth from Beasley as a pass rusher between now and the end of 2019 for me to go higher than that. But somewhere in the $8 to $12 million range, I think is probably his market. As I suggested earlier, that's a little rich for me personally without significant gains from Beasley over the next season plus. But, you know, I could see another team paying him that much money. Our next question comes from Tracy Edwards at Vic Tracy Ed. What is happening with all the blocked punt issues? Does this fall on Keith Armstrong, or is it just more inexperience from players? Well, I've said this before a number of times over the last year. I think most of the Falcons special teams issues have little to do with quote-unquote poor coaching and more just to do with questionable pieces and not executing. I think the punt blocks are perfect examples of that. You know, Olakun got beat by Alex Okafor, who is arguably a starting caliber defensive end. Eric Sauber got beat by Roosevelt Nix, who is a fullback but was a like record-setting pass-rushing defensive tackle in college. So the fact that those guys were able to beat our guys, you know, doesn't completely surprise me because they obviously have a skill set that allows them to beat blocking. You know, I think it's more just boiling down to the team not having guys to execute it and they pay for it. You wouldn't blame an offensive coach for, you know, Ryan Schrader's struggles. You wouldn't blame a defensive coach for, you know, a guy getting beat in coverage. So why do you blame the special teams coach for mistakes that are made on special teams? You know, I think looking at the special teams right now, I think the coverage, and it, again, it's been a relatively small sample size, so I don't want to make sweeping judgments here, but I think the coverage has been improved from last year, so that's a positive. Obviously, they've, you know, not been able to handle the blocking, so we'll have to see what sort of progress is made. Personally, I think, you know, it was, I said in previous Q&As this past offseason or whenever it was, but I personally thought it was a miracle that the Falcons didn't give up a block punt last year, multiple block punts last year, if I'm being completely honest. I think that was more luck than skill. So the fact that, you know, they're regressing to the mean, I guess you can make that case, by, you know, having a little less luck, as we've seen with the injury situation this year, then, you know, kind of falls in line with sort of what has been the general issue with this team, is they've been very unlucky this year. I went and looked it up. The last time a team gave up three punt blocks in one season was the Chargers in 2012. That also happened to be a year where the Falcons gave up a pair of punt blocks. They also did that in 2013 as well. So, you know, giving up block punts is not a new thing with this Falcon team. It happened particularly in those years where Eric Weems was not the personal protector. I think what's interesting, you know, I could be wrong on this, but I think in the 8 or so years that Weems served on special teams and by and large was served as the personal protector in those 8 seasons in Atlanta, the Falcons, I think, only had one punt blocked on his watch. I could be wrong about it. Maybe it was 2, but, you know, long-time listeners know how the great affinity I had for Eric Weems and his special teams value. I don't think it's a coincidence that when Eric Weems is not playing special teams with the Falcons, they have question marks on special teams. Obviously, you know, he played special teams recently and they still had some issues on that unit, but not to the degree that they have seemingly had over the last 2 seasons, in my humble opinion. But yeah, execution, you know, I'm a pro Keith Armstrong guy, but you know, if they continue to make mistakes, at some point you got to sort of just, you know, special teams guys are notorious coaches that get fired often because someone has to fall on the sword when you get underwhelming special teams performances. I personally think that the issues that the Falcons have had on special teams is because they don't have the quality of players there. I don't think it's any different than offense or defense, but for some reason, again, and I think that's part of the perception and why I'm so gung-ho on special teams matters is because part of the perception is like special teams is just whatever. You just sort of throw leftover ingredients into a stew and then, you know, if you're a good cook, in this case, if you're Keith Armstrong, you're a good cook, you could just stir it up and a feast will come out. But it's just kind of like, no, you're just throwing onion skins and tomatoes and 4-month-old garlic and, you know, all this stuff into this pot. It doesn't mean that even if you're a great chef, if your ingredients stink, then you're not going to make a good meal, you know. So that's how I sort of view it, but apparently other people don't. We got more questions to answer today, but first, before we do, I want to let you guys know that the NBA season is almost upon us, and you guys certainly want to check out the whole host of Locked On shows on the NBA side of the show, including Locked On Hawks, hosted by Brad Rowland, including Locked On NBA, hosted by David Locke. Go check out those shows. Before you know it, opening tip-off will be here, part of Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Don't you guys also think it's pretty crazy how much people pay for brand new name clothes? Why do we buy kids' clothes knowing that they're just going to outgrow them in a few months? Wouldn't it be great if there was a place out there where you could discover awesome discounts on gently used clothing? Well, now there is. That's swap.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. You guys got to stop driving store to store, sifting through racks, when you can just easily sift through millions of clothes in seconds on swap.com with easy-to-use filters to find exactly what you need. With swap.com, you can save up to 90% off retail price of your favorite brands, including Carter's, Nike, J. Crew, Lululemon, Gap, and more. Their quality, hand-inspected items are added daily, and if there's something that doesn't fit you, you can enjoy hassle-free returns within 30 days. There's a special offer for our listeners here at Locked On Falcons. By heading over to swap.com now, you can get 35% off select items on your first order by using the promo code Locked On. Plus, you can find new deals every day by visiting swap.com's homepage. Again, save 35% off your first order by using the promo code Locked On at swap.com, the world's largest online consignment and thrift store. Okay, our next question comes from Justin Sandu, another former Fan Talk participant. He asks, rank the five Falcons offensive linemen based off play this season. Which positions might there be new starters along the O-line next year? Well, from best to worst, I would go number one, Jake Matthews. Number two, a distant number two, is probably Alex Mack. You know, Max has been okay, but his mistakes have been very prominent and out of character. Number three, it's a toss-up. It depends on the week. I would say more over the last 2 weeks, I would say Schweitzer has been slightly better, but I think a lot of that has to do with the Geno Atkins factor, and I don't think it's necessarily fair to put all that on Fusco. But I would probably go three overall. I would probably go 3A Fusco and 3B Schweitzer. They're pretty close in terms of how effective they've been. I would say Fusco's probably been, over the course of the season, been slightly better, but has been pretty bad at times. Then I would go five would be Ryan Trader as the worst of the starters. As for your second question, that's tough to answer because there's still a lot of moving parts that have to go. I would think right now Schrader is probably, you know, the most vulnerable, especially if he continues to struggle like he has through these first five games for the rest of the season, just because it's going to be hard to justify keeping a soon-to-be 31-year-old starter. Schrader turns 31 in May of next year, who's going to have nearly $8 million, cost you nearly $8 million in cap space, and you can probably cut that cap hit in half by cutting him. When you've had two seasons like he's had the last 2 years. I think he was fine in 2017, particularly in pass protection. The run blocking was questionable, but now this year you have questionable run blocking in addition to questionable pass protection. And to me, it's a similar situation that we saw with that last year of Tyson Klaibo, where he just sort of lost it. Obviously, the issue there was less to do with the team decision to get rid of Tyson Klaibo, which I think, as I've said probably before on this podcast, I think was somewhat justified. It was the fact that who they tried to replace him with didn't quite work out, and that sort of blew up in their face. And one wonders if that situation sort of rears its ugly head a little bit again, and it makes the Falcons a little tentative to just basically cut bait with Schrader without having a real firm candidate to replace him. You know, I don't think Gano is going to be ready. I could be wrong about that. But I think he's a little too raw at this point to think that he's should be considered a strong candidate to take over for Schrader next year. I think he could be in the competition in the same way that Ben Garland is in the competition for a starter, but not many of us sort of really see Ben Garland as a starting caliber guard. We just see him as a quality backup. And on that note, I think the questions with potentially replacing Schrader is going to be, it's not going to be easy. Because if you want a rookie, if you're going to draft a guy and you want him to come in immediately and replace Schrader as a starter and be able to hold his own, particularly going up against some AFC South teams that have guys by the name of, oh, I don't know, J.J. Watt and Harold Landry. And, you know, if the Colts continue to stink, maybe they get Nick Bosa, you know, and who Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, et cetera, et cetera. Not to mention if Houston resigns Clowney and Merciless, you know. So you're going to throw that guy to the Wolves potentially next year, in addition to whoever else the Falcons play next year. That's just the AFC South guys. If you're going to use a, if you're going to draft a rookie and plug him in as a starter right away, and you want him to be able to, you know, tread water at least as a rookie, that's going to probably require you to use a top 15 to 20 pick. So that basically means the Falcons' first round pick needs to be an offensive tackle, which I know some of you sitting here today is like, no, we need a pass rush. And I'm there with you. If that's the case, looking at the free agent class, you know, no names really stand out. Trent Brown, Juwan James sort of are the two sort of front runners in my eyes. Maybe you can go out and get one of those guys, but it's not going to be cheap. Since there's a premium on tackles, good thing it's right tackles. There isn't as big a premium as there is on left tackles. Those are going to be the big questions with Schrader. So right now, we'll have to see how Schrader finishes. I could see him surviving another year with the Falcons sort of taking the idea of let's draft a guy on day two of next year, have him be developed for a year, and then replace Schrader in 2020. Who knows? As for the other positions, the Falcons can get out of Fusco contract after this season. And of course, there's no reason to think that they're tied to right now to Schweitzer long-term as their left guard. He's still in the midst of an audition that so far hasn't necessarily gone particularly well enough for you to feel very confident that you can go into next season being like, oh yeah, Wes Schweitzer is going to be our left guard and we're going to be just fine there. It's like, no, Wes Schweitzer is going to be our left guard. And that's probably going to be a position that we're going to want to upgrade in the very near future, based off of how he's performed so far this year. But I think right now, as far as the guard goes, I think right now you would think the plan would be to keep both of those guys and then use like a mid-round pick, a third-round pick or something like that on the guard, and have the three of them and compete and whoever the best two guys are, wind up winning that job. I think Mac is probably safe for another year, unless he chooses to retire after this season, which is of course a possibility. But I think more than likely the plan would probably be to keep Mac for one more year, draft the heir apparent to him at some point on the third day of next year's draft, and then be in a position in 2020 where if Mac doesn't have a sort of a bounce back year, you can move on from him and plug that new guy in come 2020. So I think at this point right now, I would probably say the Falcons at most only want to change one or two starters in 2019 on their offensive line. And I think the best bets at this point would be right tackle and left guard. Then I think in 2020, they would potentially be prepared to replace their center and right guard and swap out those spots. So this is one of the things that I think I've mentioned in previous episodes, and we had devoted an entire episode to this like in March or April of last year after we signed Fusco, but sort of talking about at some point the Falcons are going to have to rebuild their offensive line. They can't continue to punt on the offensive line position as they have done arguably for the last three or four seasons early in the draft. And so we'll have to see if that changes next year, which I think people need to be open to the possibility that rather than, you know, taking some superstar pass rusher or defensive lineman next year, they could take an offensive lineman. But again, it's October. So those are really March, April conversations, February, maybe conversations necessarily. I mean, we'll probably, if the season continues to slide as it is going, we might be talking about that in November, but we'll have to see. Okay, guys, we got more questions that need answering. If you guys have questions that need answering, particularly that pertained to fantasy football, well, guess what? The Locked On Podcast Network has you covered. There are now two fantasy shows, Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7. Get those latest injury updates and roster news from around the league. And then you can also check out Locked On Fantasy Football with host Vinny Iyer, always been part of the Locked On Podcast Network, is bringing you a different fantasy expert every day to help you guys win your league. Get that both podcasts, wherever you get podcasts, Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Your Team Every Day. Now, as someone who has covered the Falcons for many years, one of the things that you got to do through the good and bad times is you got to find some sort of balance in your life. And now Lokai has my back with part of their new game day collection of bracelets. This company is amazing, guy. I'm not really a big bracelet guy, but this is going to add a little swag to my game because I like Lokai's amazing message. Their game day bracelets come in all 32 NFL teams' colors. It holds water from Mount Everest, the highest point on Earth, and mud from the Dead Sea, the lowest point on Earth. That is a daily reminder that keeps balance in my life between those highs and those lows. And I think it's a reminder that helps me out as a person that covers the Falcons and certainly can help you guys out as Falcon fans themselves. Since Lokai is a new friend of the show, they are offering an exclusive discount of 25% off all their game day collection bracelets. This is a great deal that you want to take advantage of by going to lokai.com. That's lokai.com. Use the promo code Falcons25 when checking out to get 25% off any game day collection bracelet as part of this exclusive discount. You guys got to take advantage of this amazing deal. All right, Tracy's next question. We got a bunch of questions dealing sort of on this topic. Tracy Edwards' next question is, given the Falcons' loyalty to their players, what do you think would have to happen to see Coleman or Beasley or another asset traded this year? What do you think we could realistically get in return? Well, the trade deadline is the Tuesday after the bye week. So the Falcons really only have two more games to play between now and then. And so I think for the Falcons to become sellers rather than buyers at the trade deadline, you would have to see them lose their next two games. No team has ever started 1-6 and made the playoffs in the modern era of the NFL since they went to a 16-game schedule and had wild card teams, which has been the case for, 40 years or something like that. The Chiefs did start 1-5 in 2015 and then ran the table and made the playoffs that year. So it's still technically possible if they lose this week against Tampa Bay, but they would be in unprecedented territory if they lose their next two. So only at that point would I really sort of think the Falcons would start really seriously thinking about being sellers rather than buyers. But I think more than likely they probably still try to be buyers at that point, or maybe not. Who knows? As far as what they would get in return, I still think they would probably be unlikely to trade some of those guys because I think the Falcons would be in the mindset of, okay, maybe the playoffs are out of reach, but we're going to try to win, five or six out of our last nine games, and we're going to need guys like Coleman. We're going to need guys like Beasley in order to do that. And so they would still try to keep those guys. I could see maybe giving up Coleman for a third-round pick, fourth-round pick, possibly Beasley. I would be shocked at this point if any team offered more than a fifth round pick for him, but maybe I'm biased on that issue. Obviously I'm biased on that issue. Fourth round pick at best, I think. As for other assets I'd be willing to shop, I would think about shopping Devontae Campbell. I would think about shopping. I would definitely shop Mohamed Sanu. I just think, given the emergence of Ridley, given the price tag of Sanu, my personal opinion is this season should be the last year of Mohamed Sanu in Atlanta. And so if you can trade him for a fifth round pick or a sixth round pick, I think it's kind of worth it just because, that player, even though it's a late round pick, has more long-term value to you than Mohamed Sanu does at this point. And you clearly don't necessarily need Mohamed Sanu, I think, to function offensively this year. Again, part of that is due to my belief that Justin Hardy could play the Mohamed Sanu role pretty capably. But those are my thoughts. Frank Grimes asks, if you were TD and you thought the Falcons season was finished, would you be willing to trade Coleman before the trade deadline? I'd be open to it. I probably wouldn't pull the trigger on it. But if I got a third round offer for him, I'd certainly think hard about it. Last year, I think the Eagles gave up a fourth round pick for Ajayi. I'd probably want a little bit more than that for Coleman. You look at over the cap's compensatory projections, you know, if he gets a contract like similar to what Jerick McKinnon got last year, that was worth maybe like a fifth or sixth round pick, I think, according to their projections. Which, you know, if you imagine you keep Coleman, you let him, you get whatever he gives you on the field between now and the end of the season, he signs elsewhere for a similar contract that McKinnon got, then in 2020 you're getting a fifth or sixth round pick potentially, given however the formula works out. But so I would probably want more than that now in order to make the move now. Otherwise, I kind of feel like whatever Coleman's giving you on the field is kind of worth more than that. You know, like I can wait 2 years to get the fifth round pick or get the sixth round pick, so to speak, and still get, you know, 600 yards of production from Coleman after the trade deadline or whatever that number is. EKB1 at First Flight Eli asks, I thought Devontae might still have been hurt last week during the game when I noticed a stretch without him playing. I received an alert about Devontae being doubtful for the game earlier today. Do you think Coleman and Ito can be the running back committee of the future if injuries sap Freeman's career? Possibly. You know, the main knock on Coleman is his lack of consistency. He's more of an up and down home run hitter. He can run a little hot and cold in that regard. And so you want to match him with a guy that's a little bit more consistent, a little bit more reliable. And so far, it seems like Ito has that type of potential and ability. So it makes sense. You guys probably know that I think Freeman is the better of the three running backs that the Falcons have currently on the roster. Obviously, he's not being able to show that because he's not available. But I think he would lose something. But I think Coleman and Ito Smith are good enough that you could still have a high-functioning running game without Devontae moving forward. So, yeah, maybe. Brian at your homeboy. Brian asks, if Devontae Freeman keeps getting injured this season, do you think the Falcons will try to re-sign Tevin Coleman and possibly trade him? Devontae, that is. Yeah, I think the Falcons are going to try to re-sign Coleman regardless of what happens with Freeman, but I certainly think the durability concerns that Freeman is showing right now makes it even more a potential priority, and that's been something I've said for the last year, although I thought the durability concerns were more dealing with Devontae's potential concussion history as opposed to these knee and foot injuries that seemingly have plagued him since the latter half of last season. The issue with trading Devontae is it's going to be hard to do because of the way his contract is structured. It's hard to get out of his contract before 2020. His 2019 base salary of $3.75 million, if I'm not mistaken, is guaranteed currently right now for injury, which means if he is not able to pass his, I believe this is what it means, I could be wrong about this, but if he's not able to pass his year-end physical, which comes, I think, in February, then his 2019 salary becomes automatically guaranteed, and he's automatically going to get that. If he's on the roster on the fifth day of the 2019 league year, which is typically the, you know, the weekend after free agency officially kicks off, sometime around then his 2019 salary becomes fully guaranteed. So if you're going to trade him, you probably need to trade him before that time. So it's one of those things where if you don't get a deal done between now and say whatever that day is, March 13th or whatever that day happens to be, then you might as well just keep him because, you know, his salary is already guaranteed. You got to pay that money anyway. So you might as well get the yards, however many yards he gives you, whether that's for six games or 16 games, it's worth, you know, at that point, you're already paying the money. So get as many yards as you possibly can before you move on from him in 2020. Stephen Bounds asks, what could the Falcons do a little better at running the ball in the short and long term? One would think they should at least be average at running the ball, but they are below average in total yards and yards per attempt. Look, man, I don't know. Running the football is not necessarily a schematic thing. It's more of an execution thing, and the blocking just hasn't been there this year. The tight ends, you know, I think Paulson has been up and down as a blocker. I think as of lately, he's been more good than bad. Hooper hasn't quite been his normal good blocking self, but then again, he started off slow last season and then picked things up in the second half of the season, and so maybe that's something that will happen again. Obviously, Schrader has not played well either as a run blocker or as a pass protector. Fusco and Schweitzer are very hit and miss when it comes to run blocking. Mack hasn't been anywhere near as close and as good as he has been in the past year as a run blocker this season. And you know, even the most reliable guy you have right now in Jake Matthews, he's not like a road grader or anything like that. So he's only, quote-unquote, okay as a run blocker in terms of, you know, creating holes and whatnot. So I don't necessarily know if there's like a scheme fix that you can do short term that's going to fix anything. I think ultimately you have to just get better play out of these guys or long term upgrade them. I think one possible short term fix doesn't really have to do with running the football, but one way of sort of offsetting the fact that you can't run the football consistently and reliable is they'll rely on the short, quick passing game to basically replace your running game. And basically with the idea of getting 5 or 6 yards on the quick throw is the same as getting 5 or 6 yards running the football that you would ideally want on a 1st and 10 or something like that. And I think I mentioned this on a previous episode when we were leading up to that Saints game, but that was something that the Saints did early in the season when they basically couldn't run the ball effectively with Alvin Kamara those first 2 weeks, and they basically just decided to just throw quick passes to Michael Thomas, and that was one of the reasons why he had a whole bunch of catches but didn't have a huge, huge yards per catch number early in those games, because it was just basically like run 5 yards down the field, turn around, catch the ball, Michael, and we'll just move the, you know, we'll move the chains doing that. And that's something that the Falcons can certainly think about doing if they can't, if the running game doesn't improve over the next couple of games. So we'll have to see. Our last question comes from Chris Clark at Irv Gotti. Should the Falcons trade for Hassan Reddick? The short answer is no. The longer answer is maybe. But first, I think in order to pull off that trade, to make have that trade make sense, you have to decide what you want Devondre Campbell and Vic Beasley to be long term, and commit to that. To me, right now, the issue is that Hassan Reddick has overlap with sort of what those guys, like, he could be Devondre Campbell's role. That's basically what Arizona has kind of asked him to be over the last 2 years. Or he could potentially play the Vic Beasley role, which is the Campbell role is playing Sam and Will linebacker. The Beasley role is playing Sam and putting your hand in the dirt and rushing the quarterback as a pass rusher in nickel situations, you know. And, you know, you guys know me. I think Beasley is a natural Sam rather than a hand-in-the-dirt edge pass rusher as a defensive end. I don't necessarily think Reddick is a good fit in that role, at least as a hand-in-the-dirt defensive end, because I think still at the end of the day, you're going to still have an undersized edge rusher. And you're basically replacing Vic Beasley with an undersized edge rusher, and you're just basically you're going in a circle, in my opinion. I think Campbell, you know, during his rookie season, I thought his potential as a Sam linebacker was much higher, because it, to me, is a simpler position. But watching him over the last year plus, he has just not mentally gotten there to where you need to be as a Sam linebacker. And I think he's a little bit more natural as a Will linebacker. And that showed last year after Duke Riley got injured and he played more Will linebacker and Beasley moved to Sam. And his play was better, I thought, in those 8 or so games where he was playing that role. So basically if and when you acquire Reddick, what is his role going to be? Is he going to be the Sam in the base, Will in the nickel? Then if that's the case, then you got to get rid of Devondre Campbell. It's too redundant. You don't need 2 of those guys. Is he going to be this Bruce Irvin type, which is going to be Sam in the base and put his hand in the dirt in the nickel? Then if that's the case, you got to get rid of Vic Beasley. Now, I know most people are like, get rid of Vic Beasley. He's the guy that you get rid of. But again, it goes back to, why are you replacing a 240-pound edge with another 240-pound edge? In my opinion, that's stupid, personally. You know, for me, it's like, if that's what you want Reddick to be, that Bruce Irvin type, why are you going to give up value for Reddick when you could just simply ask Vic Beasley to do that? You know what I'm saying? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. You already have a player that can do that. You're just not asking him to play that role. And now you're going to trade, a 4th-round pick, a 3rd-round pick, to get another guy to do the same thing? Like, that doesn't make any sense in my eyes. If it were me, and I was trading for Hassan Reddick, and again, to be clear, I don't think the Cardinals would be very interested in trading Reddick. And if they were, you would have to give up an arm and a leg, because he's too young, he's too talented, and he certainly showed that this past Sunday, to basically give up on it and give him away, in terms of that. But if it was me and I was trading Reddick regardless of the price, I would probably then try to move both Beasley and Campbell this offseason. I would probably say, okay, Reddick, you're going to play the Campbell role as a sort of dual Sam outside linebacker, weak side linebacker. And then we'll trade Beasley and then get an actual defensive end that, you know, I don't know, weighs 260 pounds and isn't getting pushed around and can convert speed to power and has more than one move. That would be my plan of action. Call me crazy. But that's how I would sort of do it. So if I was trading for Reddick, I would basically move both of those guys and have Reddick replace Campbell and then get a new defensive end this offseason. But in the meantime, the benefit is if you were to trade in this hypothetical situation, if you were to trade for Reddick now, you would have basically eight games in the latter half of the season to figure out what his role is going to be, right? Yeah, so that's basically what would be your plan. But again, I would be reluctant to trade that. I'm a big fan of Hassan Reddick, don't get me wrong. But I just feel like you already have a Hassan Reddick, two versions of Hassan Reddick on your roster already. If you can't figure it out with those two guys, why do you think you're going to be able to figure it out with Hassan Reddick personally? So that's how I sort of view that trade possibility. Well, guys, that is it. Again, we will be back tomorrow to answer some email questions. If you have additional questions, as I said at the top of the show, you can send those in at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com or on Twitter at FalcFans. Just tell me it's podcast related. If it is podcast related and you want me to answer it on tomorrow's episode, just send it over to Locked On Falcons. Of course, the Facebook page, Locked On Falcons, is the place there. And of course, you can leave a comment at FalcFans.com where the show is posted daily as well. So, appreciate you guys tuning in. And we'll be back tomorrow with another Q&A. Until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.